This is Audible.
This program includes a PDF of illustrations. Simon & Schuster Audio presents Tales from the Shadow Hunter Academy by Cassandra Clare, Sarah Reese Brennan, Maureen Johnson, and Robin Wasserman. Read by Devin Bostick, Torrance Coombs, Brett Dalton, Jack Fallahy, Sam Hewen, Keahu Kahuanui, Kihong Lee, Nico Miralegro, Luke Pasqualino, and Chris Wood. For all those looking to be a hero like Simon, here's to you, saving entire worlds, and maybe the galaxy. Welcome to Shadow Hunter Academy, read by Devin Bostick.
The problem was that Simon did not know how to pack like a badass. For a camping trip, sure. To stay at Eric's or overnight at a weekend gig, fine. Or to go on vacation in the sun with his mom and Rebecca, no problem. Simon could throw together a jumble of suntan lotion and shorts, or appropriate band t-shirts and clean underwear at a moment's notice. Simon was prepared for normal life. Which was why he was so completely unprepared to pack for going to an elite training ground where demon-fighting half-angel beings known as Shadow Hunters would try to shape him into a member of their own warrior race. In books and movies, people were either whisked away to a magical land in the clothes they were standing up in, or they glossed over the packing part entirely. Simon now felt he had been robbed of critical information by the media. Should he be putting the kitchen knives in his bag? Should he bring the toaster and rig it up as a weapon? Simon did neither of those things. Instead, he went with the safe option. Clean underwear and hilarious t-shirts. Shadow Hunters had to love hilarious t-shirts, right? Everyone loved hilarious t-shirts. "I don't know how they feel about t-shirts with dirty jokes on them in the military academy sport," said his mom. Simon turned, too quickly, his heart lurching up into his throat. His mom was standing in the doorway, arms folded. Her always worried face was crumpled slightly with extra worry, but mostly she was looking at him with love, as she always had. Except that in a whole other set of memories Simon barely had access to, he'd become a vampire and she'd thrown him out of their house. That was one of the reasons Simon was going to the Shadow Hunter Academy, why he'd lied to his mom through his teeth that he desperately wanted to go. He'd had Magnus Bane, a warlock with cat eyes. Simon actually knew a warlock with actual cat eyes. Fake papers to convince her that he had a scholarship to this fictitious military academy. He'd done it all so he would not have to look at his mom every day and remember how she had looked at him when she was afraid of him. When she hated him. When she betrayed him. "I think I've judged my t-shirts pretty well," Simon told her. "I'm a pretty judicious guy. Nothing too sassy for the military, just good, solid, class clown material. Trust me." "I trust you, or I wouldn't be letting you go," said his mom. She walked over to him and planted a kiss on his cheek, and looked surprised and hurt when he flinched. But she did not comment, not on his last day. She put her arms around him instead. "I love you. Remember that." Simon knew he was being unfair. His mother had thrown him out thinking he was not really Simon anymore, but an unholy monster wearing her son's face. Yet he still felt she should have recognized him and loved him in spite of everything. He could not forget what she had done. Even though she had forgotten it, even though, as far as she or almost anybody else in this world was concerned, it had never happened. So he had to go. Simon tried to relax in her embrace. "I've got a lot on my plate," he said, curling his hand around his mom's arm. "But I'll try to remember that." She pulled back. so long as you do. You sure you're okay getting a lift with your friends? She meant Simon's shadow-hunting friends, who he pretended were the military academy buds who had inspired him to join up, too. Simon's shadow-hunting friends were the other reason he was going.
I'm sure, said Simon.
Bye, Mom.
I love you.
He meant it. He never stopped loving her, in this life or any other. I love you unconditionally, his mom had said once or twice when he was younger. That's how parents love. I love you no matter what. People said things like that, without thinking of potential nightmare scenarios or horrific conditions, the whole world changing and love slipping away. None of them ever dreamed love would be tested and fail. Rebecca had sent him a card that said, "Good luck, soldier boy," Simon remembered. Even when he'd been locked out of his home, door barred to him in every way it could be, his sister's arm around him and her soft voice in his ear. She had loved him, even then. So there was that. It was something, but it wasn't enough. He could not stay here, caught between two worlds and two sets of memories. He had to escape. He had to go and become a hero, the way he had been once. Then all of this would make sense. All of this would mean something. Surely it would not hurt anymore. Simon paused before he shouldered his bag and departed for the academy. He put his sister's card in his pocket. He left home for a strange new life and carried her love with him, as he had once before. Simon was meeting up with his friends, even though none of them were going to the academy. He'd agreed he'd come to the institute and say goodbye before he left. There was a time when he could have seen through glamours on his own, but Magnus had to help him do it now. Simon looked up at the strange, imposing bulk of the institute, remembering uneasily that he had passed this place before and seen an abandoned building. That was another life, though. He remembered some kind of Bible passage about how children saw through smudged glass, but growing up meant you could view things clearly. He could see the institute quite plainly, an impressive structure rising high above him. The sort of building designed to make humans feel like ants. Simon pushed open the filigreed gate, walked down the narrow path that snaked around the institute, and crossed through to the grounds. The walls that surrounded the institute enclosed a garden that struggled to thrive given its proximity to New York Avenue. There were impressive stone paths and benches, and even a statue of an angel that gave Simon nervous fits since he was a Doctor Who fan. The angel wasn't weeping exactly, but it looked too depressed for Simon's liking. Sitting on the stone bench in the middle of the garden were Magnus Bane and Alec Lightwood, a shadow hunter who was tall and dark and fairly strong and silent, at least around Simon. Magnus was chatty, though, had the aforementioned cat eyes and magic powers, and was currently wearing a clinging t-shirt in a zebra-striped pattern with pink accents. Magnus and Alec had been dating for some time. Simon guessed Magnus could talk for both of them. Behind Magnus and Alec, leaning against a stone wall, were Isabel and Clary. Isabel was leaning against the garden wall, looking over it into the distance. She looked as if she were in the middle of posing for an unbelievably glamorous photo shoot. Then again, she always did. It was her talent. Clary, however, was staring stubbornly into Isabel's face and talking to her. Simon thought Clary would get her way and get Isabel to pay attention to her eventually. That was her talent. Looking at either of them caused a pang in his chest. Looking at both of them started a dull, steady ache. So instead Simon looked for his friend Jace, who was kneeling by himself in the overgrown grass, sharpening a short blade against a stone. Simon assumed Jace had his reasons for this. Or possibly he just knew he looked cool doing it. Possibly he and Isabel could do a joint photo shoot for Badass Monthly. Everyone was assembled. Just for him. Simon would have felt both honored and loved, except mostly he felt weird, because he had only a few broken fragments of memory that said he knew these people at all, and a whole lifetime of memories that said they were armed, overly intense strangers. The kind you might avoid on public transportation. The adults of the Institute and the Clave, Isabel and Alec's mother and father and the other people, were the ones who suggested that if Simon wanted to become a shadow hunter, he should go to the Academy. It was opening its doors for the first time in decades to welcome trainees who could restore the shadow hunters' ranks that the recent war had decimated. Clary hadn't liked the idea. Isabel had said absolutely nothing on the subject, but Simon knew she hadn't liked it either. Jace had argued that he was perfectly capable of training Simon in New York, had even offered to do it all himself and catch Simon up with Clary's training. Simon had thought that was touching, and he and Jace must be closer than he actually remembered them being, but the awful truth was that he didn't want to stay in New York. He didn't want to stay around them. He didn't think he could bear the constant expression on their faces, on Isabel's and Clary's most of all, of disappointed expectation. Every time they saw him, they recognized him and knew him and expected things of him, and every time he came up blank. It was like watching someone digging where they knew they buried something precious, digging and digging and realizing that whatever it was gone. But they kept digging just the same, because the idea of losing it was so terrible, and because maybe, he was that lost treasure. He was that maybe. And he hated it. That was the secret he was trying to keep from them, the one he was always fearing he would betray. He just had to get through this one last goodbye, and then he would be away from them until he was better, until he was closer to the person they actually wanted to see. Then they would not be disappointed in him, and he would not be strange to them. He would belong. Simon did not try to alert the whole group to his presence at once. Instead, he sidled up to Jace. "Hey," he said. "Oh," Jace said carelessly, as if he hadn't been waiting out here for the express purpose of seeing Simon off. He looked up, golden gaze casual, then looked away. "You." Being too cool for school was Jace's thing. Simon supposed he must have understood and been fond of it once. "Hey, I figured I wasn't going to get the chance to ask this again. You and me," Simon said. "We're pretty tight, aren't we?" Jace looked at him for a moment, face very still, and then bounded to his feet and said, "Absolutely. We're like this." He crossed two fingers together. "Actually, we're more like this." He tried to cross them again. "We had a little bit of initial tension, as you may later recall, but that was all cleared up when you came to me and confessed that you were struggling with your feelings of intense jealousy over my, these were your words, stunning good looks and irresistible charm."
"Did I?" said Simon.
Jace clapped him on the shoulder. "Yeah, buddy, I remember it clearly." "Okay, whatever. The thing is, Alex always really quiet around me," said Simon. "Is he just shy, or did I tick him off and I don't remember it? I wouldn't like to go away without trying to make things right." Jace's expression took on that peculiar stillness again. "I'm glad you asked me that," he said finally. "There is something more going on. The girls didn't want me to tell you, but the truth is..."
"Jace, stop monopolizing Simon," said Clary. She spoke firmly, as she always did, and Jace turned to answer it, as he always did, responding to her call as if he did to no one else's. Clary came walking toward both of them, and Simon felt that pang in his chest again as her redhead drew near. She was so small. During one of their ill-fated training sessions, in which Simon had been relegated to an observer after a sprained wrist, Simon had seen Jace throw Clary into a wall. She had come right back at him. Despite that, Simon kept feeling as if she needed to be protected. Feeling this way was a particular kind of horror, having the emotions without the memories. Simon felt like he was insane to have all these feelings about strangers without having them properly backed up by familiarity and experiences he could actually recall. At the same time, he knew he wasn't feeling or expressing enough. He knew he wasn't giving them what they wanted. Clary didn't need to be protected, but somewhere within Simon was the ghost of a boy who had always wanted to be the one to protect her, and he was only hurting her by staying around, unable to be that guy. Memories came, sometimes in an overwhelming and terrifying rush, but mostly in tiny shards, jigsaw pieces Simon could hardly make sense of. One piece was a flash of walking to school with Clary, her hand so little and his barely bigger. He felt big then, though, big and proud and responsible for her. He had been determined not to let her down. "Hey, Simon," she said now. Her eyes were bright with tears. Simon knew they were all his fault. He took Clary's hand, small but calloused from both weapons and art. He wished he could find a way back to believing, even though he knew better, that she was his to protect. "Hey, Clary, you take care of yourself," he said. "I know you can," he paused. "And take care of Jace, too, that poor, helpless blonde."
Jace made an obscene gesture, which actually did feel familiar to Simon, so he knew that was their thing.
Jace hastily lowered his hand when Katarina Loss walked around the side of the Institute. She was a warlock, like Magnus, and a friend of his, but instead of having cat eyes, she was blue all over. Simon got the feeling she did not like him very much. Maybe warlocks only liked other warlocks, though Magnus did seem to like Alec quite a lot.
"Hello there," said Katarina. "Ready to go?"
Simon had been dying to go for weeks, but now that the time had come, he felt panic clawing at his throat.
"Almost," he said. "Just a second."
He nodded to Alec and Magnus, who both nodded to him. Simon felt he had to clear up whatever was weird between himself and Alec before he ventured much more.
"Bye, guys. Thanks for everything."
"Believe me, even partially releasing you from a fascist spell was my pleasure," said Magnus, lifting a hand.
He wore many rings, which glittered in the spring sunshine. Simon thought he must dazzle his enemies with his magical prowess, but also his glitter. Alec just nodded. Simon leaned down and hugged Clary, even though it made his chest hurt more. The way she felt and smelled was both strange and familiar, conflicting messages running through his brain and his body. He tried not to hug her too hard, even though she was kind of hugging him too hard. In fact, she was pretty much crushing his ribcage. He didn't mind, though. When he let go of Clary, he turned and hugged Jace. Clary watched, tears running down her face.
"Oof,"
said Jace, sounding extremely startled, but he patted Simon quickly on the back. Simon supposed they usually fist-bumped or something. He did not know the warrior way of being bros. Eric was a big hugger. He decided it would probably be good for Jace and ruffled his hair a little for emphasis before stepping away. Then Simon gathered up his courage, turned, and walked over to Isabel. Isabel was the last person he had to say goodbye to. She would be the hardest. She wasn't like Clary, openly tearful, or like any of the others, sorry to see him go, but basically all right. She seemed more indifferent than anyone. So indifferent, Simon knew it was not real.
"I'm gonna come back," said Simon.
"No doubt," Isabel said, staring off into the distance beyond his shoulder. "You always do seem to turn up."
"When I do, I'm gonna be awesome."
Simon made the promise, not sure if he could keep it. He felt as if he had to say something. He knew it was what she wanted, for him to return to her the way he had been, better than he was now. Isabel shrugged. "Don't think I'll be waiting around, Simon Lewis." Just like her pretense of indifference, that sounded like a promise of the complete opposite. Simon looked at her for a long moment. She was so overwhelmingly beautiful and impressive, he found it too much to handle. He could barely believe any of his new memories, but the idea that Isabel Lightwood had been his girlfriend seemed more unbelievable than the fact that vampires were real, and Simon had been one. He didn't have the faintest idea how he had made her feel that way about him once, and so he didn't have the faintest idea how to make her feel that way about him again. It was like asking him to fly. He had asked her to dance once, to have coffee with him twice in the months since she and Magnus had come to him and given back as much of his memory as they could. But not enough. Each time Isabel had watched him carefully, expectantly, waiting for some miracle he knew he could not perform. It meant he was tongue-tied around her all the time, so sure he was going to say the wrong thing and shatter everything that he could scarcely say anything.
"Okay," he said. "Well, I'll miss you."
Isabel's hand shot out, grasping his arm. She still wasn't looking at him.
"If you need me, I'll come," she said, and released him as abruptly as she had grabbed him.
"Okay," Simon said again, and retreated to Katarina Loss's side as she made the portal to go through to Idris, the country of the Shadow Hunters. This parting was so painful and awkward and welcome that he could not quite appreciate how awesome it was to have magic done right in front of him. He waved goodbye to all these people he barely knew and somehow loved anyway, and he hoped they could not tell how relieved he was to be going. Simon had remembered snatches about Idris, towers and a prison and stern faces and blood in the streets.
but all of it was from the city of Alicante. This time he found himself outside the city. He was standing in the lush countryside, on one side a valley and on the other meadows. There was nothing to be seen for miles but different shades of green. There were the jade-green stretches of meadows upon meadows right down to the crystalline dazzle on the horizon that was the city of glass, its towers blazing in the sunlight. On the other side, there were the emerald depths of a forest, dark green abundance cloaked in shadows, the tops of the trees ruffled in the wind like viridescent feathers. Caterina looked around them, then took one step, so she was standing right on the lip of the valley. Simon followed her, and in that one step the shadows of the forest lifted, as if shadows could become a veil. Suddenly, there were what Simon recognized as training grounds, stretches of clear ground cut into the earth with fences around them, markings indicating where shadow hunters would run or throw, etched so deep in the earth Simon could see them from where he stood. At the center of the grounds, and in the very heart of the forest, the jewel to which all the rest was background setting, was a tall, gray building with towers and spires. Simon was suddenly searching for architectural words like buttress to describe how stone could carry the shape of a swallow's wings and support a roof. The academy had a stained glass window set in its very center. In the window, darkened with age and years, an angel wielding a sword could still be seen, celestial and fierce. "Welcome to Shadowhunter Academy," said Caterina Loss, her voice gentle. They began their descent together. At one point, Simon's sneakers slid in the soft, crumbling earth of the steep slope, and Caterina had to grab hold of his jacket to steady him.
"I hope you brought some hiking boots, city boy."
"I did not bring hiking boots even slightly," said Simon.
He'd known he was packing wrong. His instincts had not led him astray, nor had they been at all helpful.
Caterina, probably disappointed by Simon's demonstrable lack of intelligence, was silent as they walked under the shadows of the boughs, in the green dusk created by the trees, until the trees became sparse and the sunlight flooded back into the space around them, and Shadowhunter Academy loomed in the distance before them. As they drew closer, Simon began to notice certain small flaws with the academy that he had not observed when he was awestruck and far away. One of the tall, skinny towers was leaning at an alarming angle. There were large bird nests in the arches, and cobwebs hanging as long and thick as curtains fluttered in a few of the windows. One of the panes in the stained glass window was gone, leaving a black space where the angel's eye should have been so that he looked like an angel turned to piracy. Simon did not feel good about any of these observations. There were people walking in front of the academy, under the gaze of the pirate angel. There was a tall woman with a mane of strawberry blonde hair, and behind her, two girls who Simon figured were academy students. They both looked about his age. A twig snapped under Simon's clumsy foot, and all three of the strolling women looked around. The strawberry blonde leaped into action, running full tilt toward them and falling on Caterina as if she was a long-lost blue sister. She seized Caterina by the shoulders, and Caterina looked extremely discomposed. "Miss Loss, thank the angel you're here," she exclaimed. "Everything is chaos, absolute chaos."
"I don't believe I've had the pleasure," Caterina observed with a significant pause.
The woman collected herself and released Caterina, nodding so her bright hair flew around her shoulders. "I'm Vivian Penhollow, the, dean of the academy. Delighted to make your acquaintance." She might speak formally, but she was awfully young to be spearheading the effort to reopen the academy and prepare all the new, desperately needed trainees for the Shadowhunter forces. Then again, Simon supposed that was what happened when you were second cousins-in-law with the consul. Simon was still trying to work out how Shadowhunter government and also Shadowhunter family trees worked. They all seemed to be related to each other, and it was all very disturbing.
"What seems to be the problem, Dean Penhollow?"
"Well, not to put too fine a point on it, the weeks allotted to renovating the academy seem to have been, wildly insufficient are the words that perhaps best describe the situation," said Dean Penhollow, her words rushing out. "And some of the teachers have already, left abruptly. I do not believe they intend to return. In fact, some of them inform me of this in very strong language. Also, the academy is a trifle chilly, and to be perfectly honest, more than a trifle structurally unsound. Moreover, in the interest of thoroughness, I must tell you there is a problem with the food supplies.
Katerina raised an ivory eyebrow. What's the problem with the food supplies?
There aren't any food supplies.
That is a problem.
The dean's shoulders sagged and her chest deflated somewhat, as if holding all that in had been confining her to an invisible corset of distress. These girls with me are two of the older students and of good Shadowhunter families, Julie Beauvale and Beatrice Velez Mendoza. They arrived yesterday and have really been proving themselves invaluable. And this must be young Simon, she said, favoring him with a smile. Simon was briefly startled and not sure why, until he dimly recalled that very few adult shadow hunters had ever shown any signs of pleasure at having a vampire in their midst. Of course, she had no reason to hate him on sight now. She'd also seemed eager to meet Katerina, Simon thought. Maybe she was all right. Or maybe she was just eager to have Katerina help her.
Right, said Katerina. Well, what a surprise that the building left vacant after an upheaval decades ago isn't running entirely smoothly after a few weeks. You best show me some of the worst trouble spots. I can shore them up so we don't have all the fuss of a baby shadow hunter breaking their little neck. Everyone stared at Katerina. The inestimable tragedy, I meant, Katerina amended, and smiled brightly. Can one of the girls be spared to show Simon his room?
She seemed eager to get rid of Simon. She really did not like him. Simon could not think what he could possibly have done to her. The dean stared at Katerina for a moment longer and then snapped out of it. Oh, yes, yes, of course. Julie, would you please see to it? Put him in the tower room.
Julie's eyebrows shot up.
Really?
Yes, really. The first room as you enter the east wing, the dean said, her voice strained, and turned back to Katerina. Miss Loss, I am once again most thankful you have arrived. Can you truly fix some of these irregularities?
There is a saying. It takes a downworlder to clear up a Shadowhunter mess, Katerina observed.
I hadn't heard that saying, said Dean Penhallow.
How odd, said Katerina, her voice fading as they walked away.
Downworlders say it often. Very often.
Simon was left abandoned and staring at the remaining girl, Julie Beauvale. He liked the look of the other girl better. Julie was very pretty, but her face and nose and mouth were all oddly narrow, giving the impression that her entire head was pursed with disapproval. Simon, was it? She asked, and her pre-pursed mouth seemed to purse further. Follow me. She turned, her movements sharp as a drill sergeant's, and Simon followed her slowly across the threshold of the academy into an echoing hall with a vaulted ceiling. He tilted his head and tried to make out if the greenish cast of the ceiling was bad lighting from the stained glass window or actual moss. Please keep up, said Julie's voice, floating from one of the six dark, small doorways cut into the stone wall. Its owner had already vanished, and Simon plunged into the darkness after her. The darkness turned out to only be a dim stone stairway, which led into a dim stone corridor. There was still hardly any light, because the windows were tiny slits in the stone. Simon remembered reading about windows like that, made so nobody could fire in at you, but so you could fire arrows out. Julie led him down one passage, down another, up a short flight of stairs, down still another passage, made her way through a small circular room, which was nice for a change, but which led to yet another passage. All the dark, closed stone and the funny smell, combined with the corridors, were making Simon think the words, passage tomb. He was trying not to think of the words, but there they were.
So, you're a demon hunter, said Simon, shifting his bag on his shoulder and hurrying after Julie. What's that like?
Shadow hunter, and that's what you're here to find out, the girl told him, and then stopped at one of the many doors, the wood-stained oak with black iron fittings, the handle carved to look like an angel's wing.
She clasped the handle, and Simon saw that it must have been turned so often over the centuries that the details of the angel's wing had been worn almost smooth. Inside was a small stone room containing two narrow beds, a suitcase open on one, with carved wooden bedposts, diamond-paned windows blurred with dust, and a large wardrobe tilted to one side as if missing a leg. There was also already a boy in there, standing on a stool. He revolved slowly on the stool to face them, regarding them from on high as if he were a statue on a plinth. He did not look unlike a statue,
if someone had dressed the statue up in jeans and a colorful red and yellow rugby shirt. The lines of his face were clean and statue-reminiscent, and he was broad-shouldered and athletic-looking, as most shadow hunters were. Simon suspected the angel did not choose the asthmatic or anyone who had ever gotten hit in the face by a volleyball in gym. The boy had a golden summer tan, dark brown eyes, and curly, light brown hair tumbling over his brow. The boy smiled at the sight of them, a dimple creasing one cheek. Simon did not consider himself much of a judge of male beauty, but he heard a small sound behind him and glanced over his shoulder. The small sound had been a sigh bursting in an irrepressible gust from Julie, who also, as Simon watched, performed a simultaneous sigh and slow, involuntary wriggle. Simon thought the sigil was probably an indication that this guy was something out of the ordinary when it came to looks. Simon rolled his eyes. Apparently all Shadowhunter dudes were underwear models, including his new roommate. His life was a joke. Julie seemed occupied regarding the dude on the stool. Simon had several questions like, who is that, and why is he on a stool, but he didn't want to be a bother.
I'm really glad you guys are here. Now, don't panic,
the guy on the stool whispered. Julie backed up a step. What is wrong with you? Simon demanded. Saying don't panic is guaranteed to make everyone panic. Be specific about the problem.
Okay, I get what you're saying and you make a fair point, continued the new boy.
He had an accent, his voice light yet rumbling over certain syllables. Simon was fairly sure he was Scottish.
It's just that I think that there's a demon possum in the wardrobe.
By the angel, said Julie.
Simon said, that's ridiculous. There was a sound from within the wardrobe, a dragging, grunting, hissing sound that raised the hairs on the back of Simon's neck. Quick as a flash and with Shadowhunter grace, Julie leaped onto the bed that did not have an open suitcase on it. Simon supposed that was his bed. The fact that he'd been here only 2 minutes and already had a girl hurling herself onto his bed would have been thrilling, except that, of course, she was fleeing infernal rodents.
Do something, Simon.
Yes, Simon. Are you Simon? Hi, Simon. Please do something about the demonic possum, said the guy on the stool.
I'm sure it's not a demonic possum.
The sound of scuffling within the wardrobe was very loud, and Simon did not feel entirely sure. It did sound like there was something enormous lurking in there.
I was born in the City of Glass, said Julie. I'm a shadow hunter, and I can handle the demonic. But I was also raised in a nice house that was not infested with filthy wildlife.
Well, I'm from Brooklyn, said Simon, and not to badmouth my beloved city or call it a verminous garbage heap with good music or anything, but I know rodents. Also, I believe I was a rodent, but that was only for a little while. I don't remember it clearly, and I don't want to discuss it. I think I can handle a possum, which again, I'm sure is not demonic.
I saw it and you guys didn't, exclaimed the guy on the stool. I'm telling you, it was suspiciously large. Fiendishly large.
There was another rustle, and some menacing scuffling. Simon sidled over to the open suitcase on the other bed. There were a lot more rugby shirts in there, but on top of them was something else.
Is that a weapon? Julie asked.
No, said Simon. It's a tennis racket. The Shadow Hunters needed more extracurricular activities. He suspected the racket was going to be a truly terrible weapon, but it was what he had. He edged back towards the wardrobe and threw the door open. There, in the splintered, gnawed-on recesses of the wardrobe, was a possum. Its red eyes shone and its small mouth opened, hissing at Simon.
How disgusting, said Julie.
Kill it, Simon!
Simon, you're our only hope, said the boy on the stool.
The possum made a movement, as if to dart forward. Simon brought the racket down with a thwack against the stone. The possum hissed again and moved in a different direction. Simon had the wild idea that it was feigning just before it actually ran between his legs. Simon let out a sound that was too close to a squawk, stumbled back, and hit wildly in several directions, striking flagstones every time. The other two screamed. Simon spun to try to locate the possum, seeing a flash of fur out of the corner of his eye and spinning again. The boy on the stool, either looking for reassurance or in a misguided effort to be helpful, grabbed at Simon's shoulders and tried to turn him, using a handful of his shirt for leverage.
There,
he yelled in Simon's ear, and Simon whirled of his own accord, was turned against his will, and walked backward into the stool. He felt the stool tip and tilt against his legs, and the boy on it snatched at Simon's shoulders again. Simon, already dizzy, lurched and then saw the possum's furry little body creeping over his sneaker and made a fatal mistake. He hit his own foot with the racket. Very hard. Simon, the stool, the boy on the stool, and the racket all went tumbling onto the stone floor. The possum streaked out of the doorway. Simon thought it cast him a red-eyed look of triumph as it went. Simon was in no condition to give chase, since he was in a jumble of chair legs and human legs, and had knocked his head against the bedpost. He was trying to sit up, rubbing his head and feeling a little dizzy, when Julie jumped off the bed. The bedpost swayed with the force of her movement and knocked against the back of Simon's head once more.
"Well, I'll leave you guys before the creature returns to his nest," Julie announced. "I'll leave you guys... to it."
She paused in the doorway, staring in the direction the possum had gone.
"Bye now," she added, and bolted in the opposite direction.
"Ow," Simon said, giving up on sitting up straight and leaning back on his hands. He grimaced.
"Very ow. Well, that was..."
He gestured to the stool, the open doorway, the disgusting wardrobe, and his supine self.
"That was,"
he continued, and found himself shaking his head and laughing,
"just an impressive display from three future awesome demon hunters."
The boy no longer on the stool looked startled, no doubt because he thought his new roommate was deranged and giggled over possums. Simon could not help it. He could not stop laughing. Any of the shadow hunters he knew back in New York would have dealt with the situation without blinking an eye. He was sure Isabel would have cut off the possum's head with a sword. But now he was surrounded by people who panicked and screamed and stood on stools, flailing disasters of human beings who could not cope with a single rodent, and Simon was one of them. They were all just normal kids. It was such a relief, Simon felt dizzy with it. Or maybe that was because he'd hit his head. He kept laughing, and when he looked over at his roommate again, the other boy met his eyes.
"What a shame our teachers didn't see that awesome performance,"
Simon's new roommate said seriously. Then he burst out laughing too, hand against his mouth, laugh lines fanning out from the corner of his eyes, as if he laughed all the time and his face had just grown used to it.
"We are gonna slay."
After the slight burst of possum-related hysterics, Simon and his new roommate got up off the floor and got to unpacking and introducing themselves.
"Sorry about all that. I'm not great with scuttling little things. I'm hoping to fight demons a little higher off the ground."
"I'm George Lovelace, by the way,"
said the boy, sitting on the bed beside his open suitcase. Simon stared at his own bag, full of its many hilarious t-shirts, and then suspiciously at the wardrobe. He didn't know if he trusted the possum wardrobe with his t-shirts.
"So you're a shadow hunter, then?"
He had worked out how shadow hunter names were constructed by now, and he'd already figured out George for a shadow hunter at first sight. Only that had been before Simon thought George might be cool. Now he was disappointed. He knew what shadow hunters thought of mundanes. It would have been nice to have someone new to all this to go through school with. It would be nice to have a cool roommate again, Simon thought, like Jordan. He could not remember Jordan, his roommate when he was a vampire, all that well, but what he remembered was good.
"Well, I'm a Lovelace," said George. "My family quit shadow hunting due to laziness in the 1700s, then went and settled outside Glasgow to become the best sheep thieves in the land. The only other branch of the Lovelaces gave up shadow hunting in the 1800s. I think they had a daughter who came back, but she died, so we were all that was left. Shadow hunters used to come knocking to past generations, and my brave ancestors were all like, 'Nope, think we'll stick with the sheep.' Until finally the Claves stopped coming around because they are tired of our layabout ways. What can I tell you? The Lovelaces are quitters."
George shrugged and made a what-can-you-do gesture with his tennis racket. The strings were broken. It was still their only weapon in case the possum returned. Simon checked his phone. Idris had no reception, big surprise, and he tossed it in the suitcase among his t-shirts.
"That's a noble legacy."
"Can you believe? I didn't know anything about it until a few weeks ago. The shadow hunters came to find us again, telling us they needed new, demon hunters in the fight against evil because a bunch of them had died in the war. Can I just say, the shadow hunters, man, they really know how to win over hearts and minds."
"They should make flyers," Simon suggested, and George grinned.
Just a bunch of them looking very cool and wearing black. The flyer could say, "Ready to be a badass? Put me in touch with the Shadow Hunter marketing department." I had more gems where that came from.
"I have some bad news to break to you about most Shadow Hunters and their ability with a photocopier," George told him. "Anyway, turned out my parents had known the whole time and just not informed me. Because why would I be interested in a little thing like that? They said my grandma was insane when she talked about dancing with the fairies. I made myself very clear on the subject of keeping intensely cool secrets from me before I left. Dad said, in fairness, that gran is completely out of her tree. It's just that fairies are also real. Probably not her 4-inch fairy lover called Bluebell, though."
"I'd bet against it," said Simon, thinking over all he remembered about fairies. "But it wouldn't be a lot."
"So you're from New York," said George. "Pretty glam."
Simon shrugged. He didn't know what to say. When he had been casually comfortable with New York his whole life, and then found out the city and his own soul had turned traitor. When he had been so painfully eager to leave.
"How'd you find out about all this? Do you have the site?"
"No," Simon said slowly. "No, I'm just ordinary, but my best friend found out she was a Shadow Hunter and the daughter of this really bad guy. And the sister of this other really bad guy. She has the worst luck with relatives. I got mixed up in it, and to tell you the truth, I don't really remember everything because..." Simon paused and tried to think of a way to explain demon-related amnesia that would not convince George that Simon had the same problem as George's grandma. Then he saw George was looking at him, his brown eyes wide.
"You're Simon," he breathed. "Simon Lewis!"
"Right," said Simon. "Hey, is my name on the door, or is there some sort of register I'm meant to be signing?"
"The vampire," George said. "Mary Morgenstern's best friend!"
Clary, said Simon. Yeah, I like to think of myself as the ex-undead. The way George was looking at him, as if he was seriously impressed rather than disappointed or expectant, was a little embarrassing. Simon had to admit, it was also a little nice. It was so different from the way anyone else had looked at him, in his old life or his new one.
"You don't understand. I arrive in this freezing hellhole full of slime and rodents, and the whole academy is buzzing with people talking about these heroes, who are my age, and actually went to a hell dimension. It gave real perspective to the fact that the toilets don't work here."
"The toilets don't work? But what do we,
how do we..."
George coughed.
"We commune with nature, if you know what I'm saying."
George and Simon looked out their casement window to the forest below, leaves gently swaying in the wind beyond the diamond-shaped panes of glass. George and Simon looked, darkly, sadly, back at each other.
"Seriously, you and your hero group is all anyone ever talks about,"
George said, returning to a more cheerful subject.
"Well, that's in the fact we have pigeons living in the ovens.
You saved the world, didn't you? And you don't remember it. It's got to be weird."
"It is weird, George. Thanks for mentioning that." George laughed, tossed his broken racket on the floor, and kept looking at Simon as if he was someone amazing.
"Wow, Simon Lewis. I guess I have someone at Spine Chillin' Academy to thank for getting a cool roommate."
George led Simon down to dinner, for which Simon was deeply grateful. The dining hall looked a lot like all the other square stone rooms in the academy, except on one end it had a massive carved mantelpiece, displaying crossed swords and the motto so worn that Simon could not read it. There were several round tables with wooden chairs of varying sizes assembled around them. Simon was starting to genuinely believe they had furnished the academy from an old person's garage sale. The tables were crowded with kids. Most of them were at least 2 years younger than Simon. Quite a few were a few years younger than that. Simon had not realized he was on the elderly side for a trainee demon hunter, and it made him nervous. He was deeply relieved when he saw some mildly familiar faces his own age. Julie of the pursed face, Beatrice, and another boy saw them and waved them over. Simon assumed the wave was for George, but when he sat down, Julie actually leaned into him.
"I can't believe you didn't say you were Simon Lewis," she said. "I thought you were just a mundane."
Simon leaned slightly away. "I am just a mundane." Julie laughed.
"You know what I mean."
"She means we all owe you a debt, Simon," said Beatrice Mendoza, smiling at him. She had a great smile. "We don't forget that. It's a pleasure to meet you, and it's a pleasure to have you here.
We might even be able to get a sensible conversation out of a boy for once.
No chance of that with John here.
The boy, who had biceps the size of Simon's head, reached across the table and offered a hand. Despite his extreme arm intimidation, Simon shook it.
I'm Jonathan Cartwright. Pleasure.
Jonathan, Simon repeated. It's a very common name for Shadowhunters, said John. After Jonathan Shadowhunt...
No, I know. I have a copy of the Codex, said Simon.
Clary had given him hers, actually, and he had fun reading the scribbling of practically everybody in the Institute on the pages. He felt he was getting to know them, safely away from them where they could not see him fail and expose his gaps of knowledge.
It's just... I know some people called Jonathan. Not any of them called themselves Jonathan.
Called themselves Jonathan.
He did not remember much about Clary's brother, but he knew his name. He did not particularly want to remember more.
Oh, right. Jonathan Herondale, said John. Of course you know him. I'm actually pretty good friends with him myself. Taught him a trick or two that probably helped you all out in the demon realms, am I right?
Do you mean Jace? Simon asked dubiously.
Yeah, obviously, said John. He probably mentioned me.
Not that I recall, said Simon, but I do have demon amnesia, so there's that.
John nodded and shrugged.
Right. Bummer. He probably mentioned me and you forgot, on account of the demon amnesia. Not to brag, but we're pretty close, me and Jace.
I wish I was close to Jace Herondale, Julie sighed. He's so gorgeous. He is foxier than a fox fur in a foxhole on fox hunting day, Beatrice agreed dreamily.
Who's this? Asked John, squinting at George, who was leaning back in his chair and looking rather amused.
Speaking of people being foxy, do you mean? I'm George Lovelace, said George. I say my surname without shame because I am secure in my masculinity like that.
Oh, a Lovelace, said John, his brow clearing.
Yeah, you can sit with us.
I got to say, my surname has never actually been a selling point before, though, George remarked. Shadowhunters, go figure.
Well, you know, said Julie, you're going to want to hang out with people in your own stream.
Come again? Simon asked.
There are two different streams in the academy, Beatrice explained. The stream for mundanes, where they inform the students more fully about the world and give them badly needed basic training, and the stream for the real Shadowhunter kids, where we're taught from a more advanced curriculum.
Julie's lip curled.
What Beatrice is saying is, there's the elite, and there's the dregs.
Simon stared at them, with a sinking feeling.
So, I'm going to be in the dregs course?
No, Simon, no, John exclaimed, looking shocked. Of course you won't be.
But I'm a mundane, Simon said again.
You're not a regular mundane, Simon, Julie told him. You're an exceptional mundane. That means exceptions are going to be made.
If anyone tried to put you in with the mundanes, I'd have words with them, John continued loftily. Any friend of Jace Herondale's is, naturally, a friend of mine.
Julie patted Simon's hand. Simon stared at his hand as if it did not belong to him.
He didn't want to be put in the stream for losers, but he didn't feel comfortable about being assured he would not be either.
But he did think he remembered Isabel, Jace, and Alec saying some sketchy things about mundanes now and then.
Isabel, Jace, and Alec weren't so bad. It was just the way they were brought up.
They didn't mean what it seemed like they meant, Simon was pretty sure.
Beatrice, who Simon had liked on sight, leaned in across Julie and said,
"You've more than earned your place."
She smiled shyly at him. Simon could not help smiling back.
"So, I'm going to be in the Drake's course?" George asked slowly. "I don't know anything about Shadowhunters and Downworlders and demons."
"Oh, no," said John. "You're a Lovelace. You'll find it will all come very easily to you. It's in your blood." George bit his lip.
"If you say so."
"Most students in the academy will be in the elite course," Beatrice said hastily. "Our new recruits are mostly like you, George. Shadowhunters are searching all over the world for lost and scattered people with Shadowhunter blood."
"So, it's Shadowhunter blood that gets you into the elite stream," George clarified. "And not knowledge at all."
"It's perfectly fair," Julie argued.
"Look at Simon. Of course he's in the elite stream. He's proven himself worthy."
Simon had to save the world. And the rest of us just get in because we have the right surname? George asked lightly. He winked at Simon. Hard luck on you, mate.
There was an uncomfortable silence around the table, but Simon suspected nobody felt as uncomfortable as he did.
Sometimes those of Shadowhunter blood are put in the dreg stream if they disgrace themselves, Julie said shortly.
Mainly, yes, it is reserved for mundanes. That's the way the Academy always worked in the past. It's how it will work in the future. We take some mundanes, those with the sight or with remarkable athletic promise, into the Academy. It's a wonderful opportunity for them, a chance to become more than they could have ever dreamed.
But they cannot keep up with real Shadowhunters.
It would hardly be fair to expect them to. They can't all be Simon.
Some of them simply will not have the aptitude, John remarked in a lofty tone. Some of them won't live through ascension.
Simon opened his mouth, but before he could ask any further questions, he was interrupted by the sound of a lone clap.
My dear students, my present and future Shadow Hunters, said Dean Penhollow, rising from her chair, welcome, welcome to Shadow Hunter Academy. It is such a joy to see you all here in the auspicious official opening of the Academy, where we will be training a whole new generation to obey the law laid down by the angel. It is an honor to have been chosen to come here, and a joy for us to have you.
Simon looked around. There are about 200 students here, he thought, uncomfortably crammed around rickety tables. He noticed again that several of them were very young and grubby and desolate. Simon's heart went out to them, even as he wondered exactly what the running water situation at the Academy was.
Nobody looked as if they felt honored to be here. Simon found himself wondering again about the Shadowhunters' recruitment methods. Julie talked about them as if they were noble, searching for lost Shadowhunter families and offering mundanes amazing opportunities. But some of these kids looked about 12.
Simon had to wonder what your life must be like if you're ready to leave it all and go fight demons at 12.
There have been a few unexpected losses from the staff, but I'm certain we will do splendidly with the excellent personnel we have remaining, Dean Penhollow continued. May I introduce Delaney Scarsbury, your training master.
The man sitting next to her got up. He made John Cartwright's biceps look like grapes held up to a grapefruit, and he actually had an eye patch, like the angel in the stained glass window.
Simon turned slowly and looked at George, who he hoped would feel him on this one. He mouthed,
"No way."
George, who obviously did feel him on this one, nodded and mouthed,
"Pirate Shadowhunter."
"I look forward to crushing you all into a pulp and molding that pulp into ferocious warriors," announced Scarsbury.
George and Simon exchanged another speaking glance. A girl at the table behind Simon began to cry. She looked about 13.
"And this is Katerina Loss, a very estimable warlock who will be teaching you a great deal about history and so on."
"Yay," said Katerina Loss, with a desultory wave of her blue fingers, as if she decided to try clapping without bothering to lift both hands. The dean soldiered on.
"In past years at the Academy, because Shadow Hunters come from all over the globe, every day of the week we would serve a delicious dish from a different nation. We certainly intend to keep up that tradition, but the kitchens are in a slight state of disrepair, and for now we have..."
"Soup," said Katerina flatly. "Vats and vats of murky brown soup. Enjoy, kids."
Dean Penhollow continued her one-woman applause.
"That's right! Enjoy, everyone, and again, welcome."
There really was nothing on offer but huge metal vats full of very questionable soup. Simon lined up for food and peered into the greasy depths of the dark liquid.
"Are there alligators in there?"
"I won't make you any promises," said Katerina, inspecting her own bowl.
Simon was exhausted and still starving when he crawled into bed that night. He tried to cheer himself up, thinking about how lately a girl had been on the bed. A girl on his bed for the first time ever, Simon thought. But then memories came back like a wisp of cloud over the moon, dimming all certainty. He remembered Clary sleeping in his bed. When they were so little, their pajamas had trucks and ponies on them. He remembered kissing Clary and how she had tasted like fresh lemonade. And he remembered Isabel, her dark hair flowing over his pillow, her throat bared to him, her toenails scratching his leg like a sexy vampire movie aside from the bit about the toenails. The other Simon had not only been a hero, but a lady killer. Well, more of a lady killer than Simon was now.
Isabel. Simon's mouth moved to form the shape of her name, pressing it into his pillow. He told himself he was not going to think about her. Not until he was really getting somewhere in the academy. Not until he was on his way to being better, being the person she wanted him to be. He turned so he was flat on his back and stared up at the stone ceiling.
"Are you awake?"
whispered George.
"Me too. I keep worrying that the possum will come back. Where did it even come from, Simon? Where did it go?"
The trials of transforming himself into a shadow hunter became apparent to Simon the very next day. First, because Scarsberry was measuring them for their gear, which was a terrifying experience on its own. Second, because it involved hurtful personal comments about Simon's physique.
"You've such narrow shoulders," Scarsberry said thoughtfully, "like a lady."
"I'm lithe," Simon informed him, with dignity. He looked bitterly over at George, who was lounging on a bench waiting for Simon to finish being measured. George's gear was sleeveless. Julie had already come over to compliment him on how good the fit was and touch his arms.
"Tell you what," said Scarsberry. "I have some gear here meant for a girl."
"Fine," said Simon. "I mean, terrible, but fine. Give it to me." Scarsberry shoved the folded black material into Simon's arms.
"It was meant for a tall girl,"
he said in a voice that was possibly intended to be comforting and definitely too loud. Everyone looked around and stared at them. Simon prevented himself from taking a sarcastic bow and stomped off to put on his gear. After they got gear, they were given weapons. Mundane students could not wear runes or use steelies or most Shadow Hunter weapons, so they were all given mundane weapons. It was meant to broaden the Shadow Hunter kids' weapons knowledge. Simon feared his own weapons knowledge was as broad as spaghetti. Dean Penhallow brought around giant boxes of terrifying knives, which seemed very strange in an academic setting, and asked them to select a dagger that suited them. Simon picked a dagger completely at random, then sat at his desk waggling it about. John nodded to it.
"Nice."
"Yeah," Simon said, nodding back and gesturing with it. "That's what I thought. Nice. Very stabby." He stabbed the dagger into the desk, where it got stuck, and Simon had to pry it out of the wood. Simon thought being trained could not possibly be as bad as being prepared to be trained. But, as it turned out, it was much worse. The academy days were half physical activity. It was like half the day was gym. Stabby, stabby gym. When they were learning the basics of swordplay, Simon was paired up with the girl he'd noticed in the dining hall, the one who had cried when Scarsberry was introduced.
"She's from the Dragstream, but I understand you're not particularly experienced with swordplay," Scarsberry told him. "If she's not enough of a challenge, let me know."
Simon stared at Scarsberry instead of doing what he wanted to do, which was saying he could not believe an adult was calling someone dregs to their face. He looked at the girl, her dark head bowed, her sword shining in her trembling hand. "Hey, I'm Simon."
"I know who you are," she muttered.
Right. Apparently Simon was a celebrity. If he had all his memories, maybe this would seem normal to him. Maybe he would know that he deserved it, instead of knowing he did not. "What's your name?" he asked.
"Marcel," she told him reluctantly.
She was not shaking anymore, he noted, now that Scarsberry had retreated. "Don't worry," he said encouragingly. "I'll go easy on you."
"Hmm," said Marisol.
She did not look like she was going to cry now. Her eyes were narrowed. Simon was not used to much younger kids, but they were both mundanes. Simon had an awkward fellow feeling. "You settling in okay? Do you miss your parents?"
"I don't have parents," Marisol said in a small, hard voice.
Simon stood stricken. He was such an idiot. He thought about it, why mundane kids might come to the academy. Mundanes would have to choose to give up their parents, their families, their former lives, unless, of course, they already had no parents and no families. He'd thought about that, but he'd forgotten, obsessing about his own memories and how he would fit in, thinking only about himself. He had a home to go back to, even though it wasn't perfect. He had a choice.
"What did the Shadow Hunters tell you when they came to recruit you?"
Marisol stared at him, her gaze clear and cold.
"They told me," she said, "that I was going to fight."
She'd been taking fencing classes since she could walk, as it turned out.
She cut him off at the knees and left him literally in the dust, stumbling as a tiny, swordy whirlwind came at him across